Is it?
Good evening, everybody.
It's a little chilly to me. But I'm drinking cold water, so that might be something.
Welcome to Simple Actions, group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Evan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Evan.
For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right, so the Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. And at this time, we'd ask you to please silence your cell phones, which I think I need to do. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everybody to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And before I read the preamble, we did as a group, as a home group, just want to thank those of you who keep coming back. I know we've been having some issues with the AC, and the church is aware of it, and we are aware of it, and it's being worked on, so we thank you for sticking with us on that. It's actually quite pleasant in here today, versus what we've had. So I'm going to go ahead and read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor imposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight, we are discussing 5, 6, and 7. I'd like to introduce, we have Ryan at the table, one of our home group members, and Larry out here from Gloucester, and all the way from Gloucester. And they're both going to share their experience tonight. So, with that being said, we're going to start on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reason why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they have gotten drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is they never completely completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told somebody else their life story. Ryan? Oh, Larry's
going to go first. I'm the guinea pig. Okay.
Larry got tricked by
somebody. That's all right. Everybody, my name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
it's good to be here tonight. I'm always grateful to be sitting in an AA meeting, and although I'm a little nervous at the moment, I feel comfortable because I know I'm surrounded by people that understand me and the nature of my situation. I want to thank David for asking me to come and speak. I don't know what, there he is. Thank you. Appreciate that. And you know, this is, I guess, when I think about the fifth step, I think this is kind of where the rubber meets the road, you know. There's a guy that's been in the program for a number of years up in Gloucester, and he always shares that when he got finished with his fifth step, it was the first time he really felt like a true member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was my experience. I related to that. You know, I think as newcomers, when we come in the door, we hear about the big boogeyman, the fifth step, and I don't know which I was more fearful of, the fourth or the fifth. I think it was like a combined issue for me, but. You know, the little bit that Evan read really lays it down as to why it's so important. You know, the fact that if I do skip this step, I may not overcome drinking. The fact that if I don't become completely honest and humble myself and completely admit my defects of character to another person, that I don't stand a chance in beginning to recover from this disease of alcoholism. I think, you know, and the key word here is action. You know, your all's home group here, simple actions. And although they're simple, they're not necessarily always easy. And I can definitely complicate them, but I can also make them harder than they have to be. I've had some experience not only with doing a fifth step, but also hearing fifth steps. And you know, at the end of the day, I think we all suffer from pretty much the same things, that we've allowed anger and fear, especially fear, to run our lives. And when I'm in the world and not only actively alcoholic, but living in fear, it causes me to act in ways that are very insane. And that insane behavior builds upon itself to the point where I'm hurting others, I'm hurting myself, I'm like that tornado they talk about ripping through the lives of everyone. And it's not until I do a four-step and really begin to examine that fear, that anger. You know, I just thought I was angry when I got here, but then I realized that the root of that anger was the fear when I got to the fear inventory. That all of that was keeping me from living any kind of decent, normal life, even in addition to my drinking. You know, my drinking was definitely at the root of my problem, but the fear and the selfishness and all the things that we suffer from as alcoholics. So I always say that when I got to the fifth step, it was my first chance to really stand in front of another human being and bear my soul, but, you know, come clean on who I am, what I'm afraid of, what runs my life, what runs my brain, how I work. And the wonderful experience of that for me was the fact that I had another alcoholic sit across from me, completely hear all this insanity, all the pain, all the fear, all the selfishness. And then when we got done with that, look at me and say, it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be all right. You know, we have a higher power. We have something to turn our lives towards to get healthier and saner. We have a program to work. We have other people to help. And it was explained to me that while I wouldn't be able to fix myself, the program of my higher power would slowly heal me over time from this disease and keep me in recovery as long as I was willing to follow these simple actions and do these steps. So the fifth step for me was, it was liberating, it was freeing. It was a chance for me to come clean. And there was a lot of fear going into it, but at the end of the road, it really was. I, I share sometimes with people that I sponsor that right after you complete a fifth step, you may not feel like this wonderful, like, wow, you know, the heavens are singing, and you know, but my experience has been that within a few days after that, you definitely feel different. I know I felt different. And it's like the things that I can remember the first time driving down the road after having completed a fifth step, and I realized something hit me as I was driving along, and I think I was on my way to work, that I just felt at peace. I felt happy. I felt a sense of serenity. And I thought, well, what's changed in my life? I'm still working at the same place. I'm still surrounded by the same people. I haven't bought anything new. Oh, wow, it's that damn fifth step. I cleaned house. I let go of some baggage. I dropped some garbage. And that's a freeing thing. So I'm glad that I have had the opportunity to do that more than once and with more than one sponsor. And I've also had the opportunity now to hear several fifth steps from sponsees. And that's a powerful experience. It's a very powerful experience to see somebody go through that process. And I'm grateful to be here, and I won't keep rambling. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
Step five. When I heard admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, all I can think is that, oh my God, you want me to talk about stuff. And I personally find that particularly horrifying and offensive. That is not something that I do. As a matter of fact, I spent the majority of my lifetime making an art of not talking about things. I'm an expert. I'm not a big liar, unless it's about booze. I don't lie about that all day long. But I was an expert at giving you as little information as possible to get you off my back. From a very young age, I didn't know I was an alcoholic, but I knew that I had like depression and all this stuff. And I spent many hours in therapist's office telling them like how horrible I felt and all these problems I had. And then they asked me what was wrong, and I refused to tell them. You know, I didn't want to tell them the stuff that was going on in my head or the things that were bothering me. You know, it's just, I feel depressed and I want to sleep all the time. Just fix me and give me a pill. anything but talking about stuff. And I was very big. It talks about solitary self-appraisals. I'm very good at self-analysis. I'm very good at getting a clear picture of what's going on. So this idea of having to talk about things, I call it, makes me want to rip my skin off and run screaming into the night type of moment. That's kind of how I feel about having to disclose all of my stuff to another human being. And there was going to be absolutely no way I ever would have done that if I hadn't truly believed that this was my only chance at getting sober and having a reasonably happy life. Because I'd spent the majority of my life, I was not a person who like woke up and was like, yes, I want to be a miserable mess all the time. I was a person who woke up and did my best to try to have a decent life. I didn't want to be like this scared, angry girl who drank every time and hurt people. And so I did a lot of things over the years to try to fix that. You know, I saw the therapist. I did exercising. I liked to move and go back to school and quit school and go to jobs and get a boyfriend and get rid of the horrible boyfriend and get married and, you know, all kinds of fun, crazy stuff. And at the end, all those things did not fix it. The drinking had proceeded to get worse. The way that I treated people was worse. I was drinking all the time because I didn't want to feel any of that stuff or deal with it anymore. And I was out of ideas. I really didn't know what to do next. So when I was presented with this, as horrifying as it seemed to me, I was actually kind of eager to do it because I did not want to live the way that I was living anymore. And I didn't really know what to expect from it. It was just presented to me, like, you are going to do this. And I was like, okay, when do I show up? And so I did. Let's see, is there anything else in there? No, I think that's all I've got for now. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to continue on page 73 with more than most people. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things that he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. So, Larry?
Yeah, there's that word fear again, and that was my default mode of operation when I first got here. And I can still go back there fairly easily, but, you know, this idea of the stage character, I was definitely, you know, I was a good used car salesman, but I was never actually a used car salesman. I could tell you anything, you know, I could, as a friend of mine said, I could sell ice to Eskimos. And the thing that I thought most important was that I always put on this good face and show you that I was okay, that I was all right. You know, I remember being an AA for a little while when someone said something about judging my insides by someone else's outsides. And I'd always treat it as the outside as the most important thing while I was dying on the inside. You know, again, this fifth step is this process where I tear those masks, those layers of the onion off, and I fully reveal myself and who I really am. And that's such a freeing thing because it's a lot of work to put on this front. You know, it's a lot of work. I heard a speaker Saturday night that talked about sifting through the laundry and trying to figure out what was clean and what was dirty. And finding something he thought was clean and then getting halfway to work and realizing he had a little bit of puke on the leg of his pants. Yeah. I totally related to that. You know, having to pull in at a rest stop somewhere and clean it off before you get to the office, you know. Always trying to cover up the insanity and the fear going on the inside. And that was the way I lived my life for a long time. You know, it wasn't until I got here and that you guys made me feel somewhat safe to begin to reveal the pain and the suffering that was going on within me, to be able to let go of some of that, to be able to share it. You know, that's really how we, you know, I don't think anybody is able to cure another alcoholic, but there's something that happens in the sharing. There's something that happens when one alcoholic sits across from another and begins to just talk about what's going on with them in an open and honest way. I mean, that's how it all got started. That's how, you know, Ebbie Thatcher, when he went to Bill's house and they begin to, you know, share openly, one alcoholic to another. Something happens, something, it's like the higher power comes in that moment. And I begin to be healed of some of the garbage and the crap that's going on the inside because it's like I'm bringing light to it. I'm letting it out. So probably one of the greatest gifts other than my sobriety is this fact that I don't need to push down the bad memories anymore. I don't need to cover up. I don't need to put on the stage character. I can remember having done a four-step inventory one time and like, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so after that fact, pulling some of it out, and some of it had been really painful stuff. Some of it I had, you know, as I was writing the inventory, I was crying through it. I had quit smoking, but was wanting a cigarette as I was writing it, and you know, really struggled with it. And I pulled this out to share with the sponsee some of the stuff that was in it. And as I was reading through it, I kind of chuckled to myself, and I said, God, this stuff doesn't touch me anymore. It's not hurting me anymore. I don't feel the pain anymore from this. I was like, wow, how the hell did that happen? What happened? How did I get released from that? And it was the simple sharing of, you know, admitting to God and to another human being, mainly my sponsor, what was going on with me and beginning to share that openly. And then I found myself being able to share it with other people in AA and people that I didn't really even know very well. I love hearing, I heard someone share in a meeting talking about going down the road with a car full of, and it was a woman, talking about a car full of women, and sharing some of the most intimate aspects of her inventory that she was horrified to share to her sponsor at one time and now was easily open and able to share it. So I think that's what happens is that, you know, not only are we beginning to recover from alcoholism and the selfishness and the insanity, but we're able to be ourselves and we're not fearful about that anymore.
Yeah, I love that description, constant fear and tension. Mm-hmm. I remember that very, very well. I was kind of like scared out of my mind all the time. Looking back, you know, I always wondered, like, I always needed a drink. I mean, that was like a thought that was constantly with me, that I had to have a drink, had to have a drink, had to have a drink. And I really didn't know why, you know. And then I read this and it makes sense. It's because I was so packed with fear and tension that I just needed that relief, you know, that relaxation that that the alcohol brought me. I forget where I was going with that. I did have a point. I remember getting heart palpitations just because of the fear. My heart would just pound for days on end. I remember one morning waking up and I was just like drenched in sweat and absolutely terrified, and I couldn't get out of the bed. I just kind of lay there for a while, like rocking. It's kind of lame and pathetic, but I was like rocking, going, it's all going to be okay, it's all going to be okay. I had no idea how it was going to be okay, but I just knew. And I remember at the end, I ended up having to live with my mother. And I was ashamed of myself. I was embarrassed to walk out of the bedroom and face people. And it was because I was absolutely terrified that they were going to discover the truth about me, you know? At that time, I'm a person, I've got a lot of pride. I always wanted to be the girl who had her stuff together. I always thought that maybe I don't know how to do everything, but given the opportunity, I'll figure out how to figure it out. Like, I've never changed the oil on my car, but I'm pretty sure that if I really needed to, I could figure out how to change that oil, you know? President. Definitely could make a great president. No one's asked me to be president. But if you give me that position, I will run America fabulously. You know? So I always wanted to be the girl who had her stuff together. And I tried really, really hard to portray that image. But the last couple of years, it became harder and harder to do that. Because what was happening is I was drinking. I was an officer's wife. I was the family readiness group leader. If you don't know what that is, it's a committee that supports the wives and spouses of the deployed troops, and I led that committee. I remember this one time, I was just gonna have one drink before the committee meeting, and so I did. I had a drink, and I showed up there, and I was a little toasted. And most people did not notice. Unfortunately, one or two ladies did. And the next day, my husband comes in and he tells me, you know, I don't want to make a big deal about this, but some of the folks complain. They said they don't want to come to this meeting if that's the kind of thing it's going to be, you know, some drunk girl up there, you know. So those kind of things, having people discover that kind of stuff was horrifying to me. And so I went through a lot of effort to not be discovered. And it got harder and harder when, you know, you're like getting fired from a job and people start to say things to you. It got harder and harder when I had like 40 beer cans hidden in a closet and people start discovering it with my folks. You know, I couldn't keep up that image. So it was kind of horrifying. And I know exactly what it talks about. Sometimes I want to try to explain this paragraph about leading a double life, but it's written so perfectly. And basically what it says is the truth. I was walking around like a big fat fake. No? So, thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to continue on page 75. When we decide who's to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we are about to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approach us in this way, will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Larry?
Man, Bill Wilson was a poet, was he not? I read sections of the Big Book now and I think, man, he was an egotistical alcoholic just like me. It's good. It's good stuff. It's funny. He gets very, very flowery in his language. But, you know, it's true that, you know, once I've chosen a sponsor, and you know, of course, this was written in 1939, just 4 years after AA had really officially formed, and there wasn't a lot of people out there, so they were concerned that, you know, someone would get a hold of the book and try to work through these steps and may not have another alcoholic to work with, so they wanted you to find someone that you could feel confident in discussing your problems with. But today, it's, you know, it's a different world. Most of us are living communities where there's lots of AA meetings regularly and we can get sponsorship fairly easily. And that's the great thing. When I sit down with a sponsor, he knows what I'm there for. He knows what I'm trying to accomplish. He's guided me, hopefully, up to this point through the first four steps. And hopefully he's done a fifth step himself and has had that experience. Otherwise, you might hear some of the things I say and get scared. And, you know, I like this thing about we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating. You know, there's that bringing light in, letting things go. Illuminating every twisted character, every dark cranny of the past. You know, I really, when I got here, I thought I was this god-awful person that I had just, you know, I had the ego in reverse thing. You know, woe is me, I'm such a bad person, you know. And I can remember my first fifth step and coming to the end of it, and my sponsor at that time was like, is that it? That's all you got? You know, is that? And I had dumped some of the what I thought was just the most horrible stuff in the world. And of course, for him, it was just run-of-the-mill alcoholic behavior. Run-of-the-mill alcoholic. That's what I learned. I learned I wasn't so daggone as unique as I thought I was. I was just a run-of-the-mill drunk. You know, no better or no worse than any of you. And this next, you know, that the last paragraph that Evan read refers back to that feeling that I had. I can remember distinctly that first, I think it was the first fifth step, and a few days later, having the sense that somehow things felt different. And not really even knowing exactly what it was at first, and then it hit me. You know, I just did a fifth step. Maybe that's got something to do with it. And I can't say that every fifth step I've done or has been this tremendous spiritual experience, but it always seems to lighten my load, to bring me a sense of peace and serenity, and it always seems to take away the bite of whatever it is that's plaguing me, whether it's a fear, resentment, whatever it is. And the thing that I get now is I love to hear a fifth step, although some of them are really boring, I found. I thought they were going to be fun and interesting, and, you know, after the first hour or two, you kind of like, all right, this is the same stuff I did. This is nothing new here, you know. But to watch someone else go through that, and then see someone else get free from it, to see someone else get the gift of sobriety and the gift of a spiritual awakening and a spiritual experience. And that was the last thing I wanted to comment on, was this fact that we may have had spiritual beliefs, which I didn't have very many of when I got here, but then we begin to have an experience. And that's what keeps me here. That's what keeps me coming back for more, is the experience I get. The experience I get from working the steps and working with other alcoholics. Thanks.
Thank you. That deciding who is to hear our story. Yeah, that's a fun one. Especially because I was going to talk about the stuff that I was never going to talk about. And start to basically kind of let my guard down a little, because I really don't trust people. And what I've realized over time is the big thing is, like, you're going to, like, judge me and reject me. So it was very comforting to come into AA and hear people talking about their own crazy stuff. That kind of allowed me to be a little bit more open about mine. And when I did make the decision, I did waste no time to do it. But when it comes to the experiences that talk about the things that start to happen for you during a fifth step, and that illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past, first year I ended up doing like two fifth steps. And the first one, to be honest with you, that didn't happen for me. And I believe it is because I had a little secret that I might have kept. The truth be told is I don't think I was intentionally keeping it. It's just I wrote this inventory and I wasn't quite sure where it fit in. And I sat down and I did that first four step with somebody and I talked to my sponsor about it. And unfortunately, she just kind of blew me off. So I sat with that for a long time and I got another sponsor. And we went through the steps again, and that deep, dark secret that I was never going to tell anybody, that I was ashamed of, and all that fun stuff came out. And I will tell you, I left that fifth step, and I was driving home, and all the stuff that it talks about right here happened. Mm-hmm. I felt the nearness of my Creator. I didn't even know what that means. That sounds weird. I felt connected to other people for the first time in my life. If you know me, you know I'm not a particularly friendly person. I'm a little standoffish. So it was a very unusual experience for me to feel connected to another human being. And the next day, or it was next couple of days, I ran into somebody that I considered my friend. And all of a sudden, that barrier just kind of dropped. And as you, some of you may also know, I don't really do hugs. And I found myself running up to this person, giving them a great big hug, being like, "You are my friend." And it sounds cheesy and lame, but it was a big deal for me. And all that weight and stuff just left, and it was amazing, and it was blew my mind, to be quite frank. It wasn't anything that I expected to do with it. I just wanted to, like, stop suffering. I didn't expect all this other cool stuff to start happening for me. But that, I think that secret was that the dark secret from the past. Apparently those are very, very bad. And some people drink over that. I'm going to say 100% certain that I'm not the only person who's done that, who's walked away from a fifth step with the secret. And I'm sure that there are people that do drink from that. And I think the reason that I stayed sober through that is because when it came down to it, I rectified it. I sucked it up, showed up, and said the things that I needed to say. So, thank you.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we return to the page which contains the 12 steps, carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimmed on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Larry?
Has anybody else like gone home and taken the book and like put it up on the shelf? I think I did that like the first two times. I went, I'm gonna put it on the shelf. I'm gonna take it down. A little bit of a perfectionist, you know, like a good alcoholic, very thorough. You know, sometimes that effort to be thorough can stall me right into not inaction. It'll stall me right into inaction. And I have to be careful of that. I think basically what they're getting at here is that have we been as thorough and as honest as we can be up to this point? Have I really accepted the fact that I'm alcoholic, that I am powerless, that my life's unmanageable? You know, if I really accepted that, have I really given my life over to a higher power to the best of my ability and made that decision to carry through with the rest of the steps? Have I been as thorough and honest and fearless as possible in the fourth step? And have I admitted everything to my sponsor? And I'm like, Ryan, I've had to go back. I've had to go back and say, you know, there is something that I left out that maybe I should say, you know. But I find the longer I'm in the program, I'm not as rigid about the letter of the law as I am the spirit of the law. And are we, you know, am I really trying to do the right thing? And I encourage my sponsees in the same way. I tell them, don't get too caught up in the particular structure of your step and the particular, you know, the book is a guide. It's a guide. It's a map. But don't lose sight of where you're heading because you're so caught up on what the map's saying. I think it's important for us to have this experience. And if my heart's in it and I'm giving it my best effort, I will have that experience. I will have that spiritual awakening. And that, you know, thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. I knew myself better after this process. And I think eventually that allowed me to connect more with my higher power. But the truth is this does help me walk free. This is the beginning of liberation for me. I thought it would be in the third step, but I think it was really in the fifth step. I'll pass.
Yeah. Going home and sitting quietly for an hour, doesn't that sound like fun? It always sounds a little bit like torture to me. What? You want me to not think? And I guess one of the things I have to say, I guess kind of relates to what I said before. When I left that first fifth step that I did and I went home to sit quietly, I felt like I had a closet full of junk, which was kind of my cue. And I don't even think I sat for an hour. I hear that's pretty common too. Later on, I did sit for an hour, and it was just kind of a, hey, wow, we do have this. But this is one that kind of makes me laugh. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we asked if we had admitted anything. God, I wish I was a person who could be honest with myself for that. When I've admitted stuff, I've omitted stuff, I've found out the hard way. When I first got to AA, I was very aware that I was an alcoholic. I had no problem admitting that, and so I thought I had done the first step. I was like sitting in a rehab. I had been trying to quit for a year. My husband had just left, and it was like powerless over alcohol, life unmanageable. Yep, definitely got that one. But I didn't, because I found myself drinking 4 months later because I hadn't admitted that. So a lot of times when I've missed something, it just kind of pops up on me, and I realize too late. I have a hard time being honest with myself about that kind of stuff. But it is important to kind of look back and see, do I believe those things? But it requires a level of self-honesty, I think, that I am sometimes not capable of. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Rob. All right, continue on page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step six. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can He now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. Larry?
Key word. I was reading through the book with a couple of sponsees just the other day, and I said it's all about willingness. It's all about willingness. I even like my sponsor will say, he doesn't say the how of the program, he says the who, because he thinks, you know, willingness comes first. Before I can be honest and open-minded, I have to at least be willing to try. And, you know, when it comes to step six and then into seven, I for a long time thought that my goal here was to come in here and fix myself. You know, I was going to do these steps and take the suggestions and I was going to fix me. And I think I was in here for about 2 or 3 years before I had someone that I was close to in AA said to me, Larry, how old are you? And I think at the time I was in my late 30s, 37, 38. And they said, well, you've been working on your life for 38 years. What makes you think you're going to fix yourself now? And I have to admit that hurt my feelings a little bit. That's nice. But it was the absolute truth. I can't fix me. That's why I'm here. I'm as powerless over me almost as I am over my alcoholism. I need help. I need guidance. I need direction. I need a good sponsor, and I need a good higher power to help me get through this process, to get through this thing called life to the best of my ability. But it is all about, it comes down to me for being willing, willing to have something new happen for myself. I always ask sponsees that. Are you willing to have something new happen? Even if they've been through the book before, we're willing to have a new experience with the book and these steps. I like that thing, that set-aside prayer you hear people refer to. And it's about allowing something new to happen. But I have to be willing. That's where it begins, with the willingness. And if I've closed my mind off, or I have a part of me that's not willing to go through this process honestly and openly, then I'm not gonna get the full benefit of what's being offered. So I really concentrate on that word, willingness. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, step six. The meaning of that has changed from when I was new to now. So I'm going to talk a little bit about both. So as much during my life as I like to pretend that I was the girl who had her stuff all together, there were times late at night when, to be quite frank, I was really, really confused because I didn't understand why I had making friends was a big thing for me. Like, why can I not make friends? How come other people can make friends? Is there like an instruction manual somewhere? I couldn't figure out why I was like in so much pain. Like, it didn't make sense. I didn't have like a beaver cleaver childhood, but it wasn't particularly horrible. You'll never see like a Lifetime movie about me, you know? So like, why am I in so much pain? It wasn't that bad, girl. Get over it. I was very confused about why I kept messing up my life. Like, I'm an intelligent, capable girl. I can hard work. And yet, like, after, you know, 12 years and, you know, 4 different colleges, I hadn't even put together an associate's degree. Like, what's up with that? You know, like, why do these things keep happening to me? You know, my mom always said to me, you know, Ryan, you always mess up your life, but you pick yourself back up. And I'm like, I'm tired of picking myself back up. Like, why does this keep happening? Please. And what was really, really amazing was in the process of doing that fourth and fifth step, I wasn't confused anymore. You know, I finally understood what was going on. I finally saw a lot of the things in myself that were causing all those problems. So when somebody asked me, are you willing to have all that taken away? Heck yeah. Living like that wasn't particularly fun. Thank you very much. That initial rush is yes, absolutely. I didn't want to live like that anymore. Please take it away. And a lot of really things amazing happened that. The longer I've stayed sober, the more this has been meant to me. Because like he said, I'm a girl who will fix herself. I like to do stuff myself. I don't need any help. Thank you very much. I got this. And you know, when I sit down and you see some of the stuff about yourself, you know, the selfishness and the lying and all that fun stuff. And I really think that I should like see that stuff and just change myself. And so getting to a place where I really appreciate that it's something bigger than me that's got to change that for me, that's something that I've had to come back to over and over and over again. And clinging on to stuff, I didn't think that I did that, but sometimes I do. And usually that's because I do not have a full appreciation of how destructive it is. Like, I'm a very judgmental person. I'm a good judge. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing because sometimes it keeps me out of trouble. Like, whoa, you shouldn't talk to him. He's going to, right? But it's hard to have relationships with people on a friendship level when I'm like judging them all the time because you don't meet my standards or you're all messed up, you know? How can you talk freely between friends when you're like, why are you doing that? Ew. and so I start to see how those flaws interfere with having a happy, useful life. And then I've got to once again go back to that willingness to have it removed. So, thank you.
Thank you. So, continuing on, 76. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7. Larry?
Yeah, this is pretty quick. It's one of the parts of the big book that's really concise is 6 and 7, and 7 just consists of this prayer. It is really simple. These steps really are simple. But it's about that willingness and it's about the effort to do the actions. And to me, this is the effort, almost like repeating what I did in the third step. Again, I'm trying to offer myself up to my higher power. I'm trying to offer myself to have something new happen, to have something recreated within me. as a result of these steps, hopefully I've cleared enough of the garbage between me and my higher power. You know, I have some people that I work with that I sponsor that come in with really well-established beliefs. They're active in their particular religion and they have a very strong faith in God, but they don't understand why they can't stay sober and why they do the things they do, why they behave alcoholically. And I'll say, you know, when we get active, we do so much, we build up so much garbage between us and our higher power. It's almost like each action, each fear, each resentment, I'm putting another brick between me and my higher power. So the sunlight of the Spirit can't shine on me anymore. It's there, but it's on the other side of this wall I've built. And I know it's there, but I can't connect with it. So it's like this step work up to this point rips that wall down. It clears away the wreckage so that I can have a clear connection. And so now that I have this clear connection through the first six steps, now I'm saying, here I am. Take me as I am, good and bad. You know, take all of me. Do with me what you will. And then it reminds me why I'm here in the first place. Remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. I'm here to fit myself to be of maximum benefit to my higher power and to those about me. I used to think that I was here to get sober, to have fun, to enjoy my life. The party. Party without alcohol and drugs. I'm going to have a good time. I'm sober. No consequences. I remember the first time hearing a speaker, and it was a woman from Richmond, and she said, it's my wife's sponsor now, as a matter of fact. She said, my life is not my own. When I came in here and I was given a new life, it's not mine to do with as I want. It's mine to be of service. It's mine to offer myself up to my higher power and to those of you in AA. That's why I've been given this gift of sobriety. Not to selfishly use it the way I want to, but to offer myself to you all, to be of use, to be of service. And I think this step is really, I'm saying I'm prepared. Do that thing with me. And I'd love to have like all the crap taken away. I'd love to be able to walk into a room and people go, that's a really good guy over there. He always does the right thing. You know, I like him. I always used to say, oh, that's why I wore on my tombstone. Here lies Larry. Everybody loved him. You know, what an egotistical, selfish thing. It's good to be here. I feel good being here. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really funny, but I found that very offensive that I have to like go out and do God's bidding now. I have lots of other really, really fabulous plans. And that can be, to be quite frank, can be something that can trip me up, because so often I think that like God's bidding and plans for me is going to be really, really horrible. You know, like helping people all the time, and you know, I want to go have fun. So what's important for me to remember that is that God's will in my life is also for me to be happy, joyous, and free. And that's a part of that. You know, I went around the world or life doing what I want, whatever I thought was going to make me happy, trying to get whatever I thought was going to make me happy. And none of that ever worked. So maybe this, like, helping other people, doing God's will stuff can bring some happiness into my life. And I'll tell you, it has. It never seems to work. And to be quite frank, I frequently have to do things that I don't want to do. But when I do those things that I don't want to do, I get happier. I get the real word I actually have for it is freer. It's been like finding freedom. That's what booze did for me. Booze gave me a huge sense of freedom, you know, and it was amazing. And that's what doing all this stuff, I always call it stuff, has done for me, is I get freer and freer and freer the more I do it. And to be quite frank, it blows my mind over and over again. They talk about having had a spiritual experience. It hasn't been one experience for me. This is something that has not stopped. I haven't been happy about it all the time. Sometimes I pout and stuff, but it's been freaking amazing and it hasn't stopped. I just had to continue to do it. But going back a little bit to this this prayer about my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. That was kind of important to me. Earlier on in the book, when it talks about the third step prayer, Just before that, there's something called the A's, B's, and C's. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And somebody asked me one time, do you believe those three things? And I had a problem with C. I believed that God could help me out. I just didn't believe that he would. I don't know why. Maybe I was too bad or too messed up or whatever it is. So what's particularly comforting to me about this prayer is that God will take all of me, good and bad. God already knows that I've done messed up stuff. He already knows that I'm going to mess up stuff in the future, and that's okay. In my belief, God's just glad that I've gotten with the program and I'm working to change my life. And this definitely is about being useful to other people. It's not about me getting what I want anymore. It's about being helpful to other folks. And those defects of character, I am 100% certain, that like my defects of character, I don't think any of them have fully disappeared. they seem to kind of come and go. But I will tell you, when I am stepping up to help out another human being with us in a very sincere way, at that particular moment in time, they all just kind of disappear. I'm not worried about, you know, getting anything from anybody. I'm not worried about my pride, you know, those secrets that I never wanted to tell, like he was talking about. All of a sudden, I'm able to share that in a real open and honest way. You know, I don't have that fear anymore. I'm not judging them, which is pretty good for me. You know, all that stuff just seems to magically disappear in that moment when I'm trying to help out somebody else out. And so, yeah, that's what I got to say. Thank you.
Cool. All right. Thank you, guys. So now we're going to pass the seven tradition baskets around. And the seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, and district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contributions is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And now I'd like to open the floor for AA-related announcements only, please. Yeah.
Everybody's wrong around with the non-practicing
alcoholic.
And we used to attend the candlelight meeting on Friday, January the 9th. We will not be having a meeting at candlelight because of the NEST program. From January 7th to January 14th, they've asked all the groups to have meetings and not to have meetings so that they can host NEST. So that's January 9th for the candlelight.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Yeah, Rand.
I ran real alcoholic. New Year's Eve, the Hampton Road Committee of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous is having the Anonymity Ball, which is at 99 East Mercury Boulevard in Hampton. It'll start at 7 o'clock with food, 8 o'clock speaker, and then the Shake Your Groove thing will come later. Then, when you're done with all that wonderfulness, on January 4th, my home group, which hospital in the cafeteria will be having their second anniversary with a brunch. The ABC brunch started at 10 a.m. and speaker at 11.
All right. Thank you. I like that little salute. Thank you. Anybody else?
I'd like just to mention that I don't know if there's anything going on down here on Christmas Day, but I know in Yorktown, the Shoulder to Shoulder group, many of y'all from here have spoken there before. From noon until 8 p.m. on Christmas Day, they're going to have continuous meetings. I think they might take a 30-minute break between meetings, but there'll be meetings regularly. They're going to have chili and cornbread and side dishes and desserts. So if you want to get away from wonderful family fun, if you need a break, and wanted to take a little road trip to Yorktown, shoulder to shoulder. It's a Grace Episcopal Church in Yorktown, and if you need more information, you can see me at the end of the meeting. Thanks.
Cool. Thank you. Anybody else? All right, thank you. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, could we please raise your hands? All right. We have literature available over the table over there. Books are for purchase. Anything that can fold is free. See any home group member if you want to purchase a book. And newcomers, we are absolutely delighted to have newcomers attend our meeting. If you're new in your first 30 days of sobriety, we'd like to just welcome you by your first name. Any newcomers tonight?
Hey, Dylan.
Hey, Dylan. Welcome, man. All right. Thank you. So, sponsorship question. Sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, could we please have you raise your hand at this time? All right. And we also, here at this meeting, will have two of our home group members standing at the front here who will answer any sponsorship questions you have. And we have a man and a woman from the home group, Jill and Jason, tonight. They'll be up at the front. So just a few quick house cleaning reminders. Please use the butt can out front, well away from the church doors. Also, all these meetings are recorded, and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. We're also trying to start up an email circulation, so we have hopefully a notebook up there. If you want to leave us your name and email, we'll be able to send you any kind of upcoming events via email. And so, in closing, let's definitely thank our table. Very well. And thanks to all who participated. We, after cleanup, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. At the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at IHOP, which the room will be warmer and the pancakes will be more delicious than they are here. So come on out. It's always a lot of fun. Please come out.
It's a good plug.
So we have a volunteer, hopefully, to read the last two paragraphs at on page 164. Jason.
Jason,
how about it?
Jason.
Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See one day your relationship with him is right. The great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely be someone as you turn the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen.
Thank you. So we close the meeting here with the Lord's Prayer. Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses,